Welcome to the Nothing But the Truth podcast. We are your hosts,
Kelly Richmond Pope
and Tim Edson. In any industry, there can be many forms of fraud, corruption, and whistleblowers, the violator and the violated, the guilty and the innocent. On this podcast, we want you to hear the truth where you might find yourself experiencing different feelings and emotions towards these stories that fall on either side of the line, or maybe even on the line. We'll be bringing you a variety of stories told directly from the sources, whether they committed the fraud, were forced to commit the fraud, and even those who blew the whistle on their employers that were wrongfully accused.
So this week's episode is about an individual who was presented with an opportunity, or who took an opportunity, to take some money from an ATM machine. And not just $5 or $10, but like thousands of dollars. And we're going to share that with you. And you can guarantee that this is nothing but the truth. This is his true story.
So we've decided not to give out his name because he's already paid his dues from the stolen money, been convicted, and now he's trying to turn his life around, has his own business, and trying to do well for himself. So,
and is doing well for himself, but realizes the power in story and wanted to share this with an audience to hopefully help people understand how good people can make bad decisions. So with that, our first episode launches.
Okay, so born and raised in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And shortly after high school, mom always told me, you got an option. You can go to school or you can get a job if you want to stay here. So I chose to go to school. I started at A&T in Greensboro in 2001. And I started off pretty good until I got to the second semester and I started feeling myself and I wanted to play around a little bit and enjoy college life against the advice my parents had gave me. So I went home after the second semester. My grades had dropped tremendously. And I was in the grocery store and I ran across a recruiter and he happened to be a Marine. He was dressed to the T, right? He was sharp. Like, oh my God, if I was to be a part of any organization, it would be the Marine Corps or any armed forces. It would be the Marine Corps. Just simply because the way he carried himself and how sharp he was. So that led me to the Marine Corps in 2002. And that's kind of where it all started at. Some of the values that I picked up from the Marine Corps was, the biggest one was a sense of urgency. Everything was done quick, fast, and in a hurry. Harder, faster, louder. Of course, honor, courage, and commitment is three of the values that Marines live by. But to be prompt, to be on time, to look good, to just be a man of my word, to always carry a pen. I don't know. I still carry a pen in the collar of my shirt today. So, I mean, that's just to name a few. So I started in 2002. I joined the Marine Corps in 2002 on a 2x6 contract, meaning I served 2 years active and 6 years inactive. The 2 years that I was active, I was in 29 Palms, California, doing my job training as a communication electronics technician. That's just a fancy term or job title of somebody who worked on radios and satellites. So I was responsible for troubleshooting and repairing any radio devices that they used in combat and also any of the satellites that was used for communication devices as well. As I continued my 2 year active term with the United States Marine Corps, time got closer to me to become inactive. And I began to write letters up my chain of command like, guys, I made a mistake, right? I signed up as a reservist and I wish I would have signed up for active duty. I knew time was coming for me to go home and continue the lifestyle that I was living before I joined the Marine Corps and just be a reservist like once a month, whatever they did. And I knew I didn't want it. So I started to talk to as many people as I can to try to get out of being a reservist and stay active duty. Well, needless to say, none of that was possible, right? Nobody would. There was nothing I can do because my reserve unit had already gave me a piece of my bonus. So as I came home, it was kind of like, all right, now it's back to life as usual. I got to find a job, got to try to get back in school. And that led me to the job that I got, servicing ATM machines. I think they called it electronics technician. I believe with all my heart that I got the job because of my experience in the United States Marine Corps. I was young. I was only about 20 years old. I had no college experience as an electronics technician. So everything that I learned and gained from the Marine Corps landed me this position. I believe they naturally trusted me because of my service with the United States Marine Corps. When I got the job, I trained for probably about 2 months. This was in January. I had to ride with one of the senior level associates or senior level employees. So when I started training, I never had the intention on let me learn this stuff so I can take the money. I was literally excited about being an electronics technician, working on circuits and capacitors and current and voltage. Like, I had no idea that I was going to be working with money. Although money was not my primary responsibility, like money was just, it was the cause of the problems because I was dealing with an ATM machine. But I went to work on the circuits and the computers and stuff that's inside the ATM machines. One thing I learned from servicing ATM machines was that it's a whole lot of money in them. It's a whole lot of money in some ATM machines. They have the ability to hold a lot of money. If it was packed to capacity, some ATM machines out there could hold easily up to $1 million because of all the risk that associated with having a machine with that much money in it. I highly doubt that any of them will hold that much money in it, but they had the capability of holding that much. My dad always told me to, you know, just fall back, right? I was making a lot of money on this job. Don't worry about getting a house or apartment or a car. When I got out the Marine Corps, you know, just ride it out. Learn some of the money principles he told me, put money away, save up the money that I needed to get the apartment and the car, everything else that I wanted at this age. But immediate gratification kicked in. Like, I had to have it right now. I had to have it right then. So seeing all of this money every day became a temptation. Man, this is crazy. This is bananas. On a day-to-day basis, I had access to, just to take a wild guess, I would say I had access to about easily over $1 million daily because I visited so many ATMs. I'm talking probably about 8 to 10 ATMs per day we serviced. So I went against my dad's wishes or my dad's advice, but I had to have it right then and right there. So I got an apartment, and in this apartment, I had no furniture. That was the first thing that I needed money for. One day I went to work and I grabbed just a pinch. I mean, I can literally see the area I was in. I remember, if I could find the address, I remember the exact ATM I was at when I took the first bit of money. Everything that I learned from my parents, from the Marine Corps, from my childhood, the values, they didn't go anywhere. They didn't go anywhere. It was like I can't even say I put them to the side, because every time I took money, or when I began to take money from the ATM, from those ATM machines, the desire to do the opposite was still there. It was kind of like I suppressed it. I suppressed my values and everything that I stood for, everything that I had learned for so many years. It didn't matter. I think most people at the age and the maturity level that I was at would definitely commit that same crime given the same opportunities that I had. And here's why. 20 years old, you're not really thinking about life. It's just kind of like immediate gratification. I want it and I want it right now. You know what? The consequences was always there. You know, larceny, stealing, everybody knows the consequence of stealing. So I don't think it's fair to say that, you know, I wasn't, or anybody at this age or maturity level wouldn't be thinking about the consequences, because we already know what the deal is. at that age and maturity level, I didn't think I was going to get caught. I didn't think that there was a way that I can get caught. I mean, when you take a pinch, I'm talking a half of an inch, literally a half an inch of $20 bills, and a half an inch equates to about anywhere from $1 to $2,000. A cassette is about the size of a shoebox. Each cassette can hold about $250,000 easily. Every main ATM, like on a main road, is capable of holding four cassettes. I'm talking any ATM has the ability to hold $1 million. So when you think of going in, you know, my job calls me or they page me, they say, Ken, we have a paper jam or an ATM is not down. ATM is down. It's not working. Can you go look? I give them an ETA. I show up. I pull out the cassettes, one cassette, two cassettes or four cassettes, and find out what a money jam is. I have to open the cassette and look in the cassette to see if one of the bills is actually torn or jammed in there. When I open a cassette and, you know, it has the ability of holding up to $250,000 in one cassette, like, nobody will notice that I took a pinch, which is like half an inch. Nobody will notice that $1,000 or $2,000 is gone out of $250,000 in this cassette. At least that's what I thought. So I did not believe that I could be caught, especially when I'm not the only person that goes in that one ATM per day. It could be two or three, maybe four people that go in. You got to think, an ATM is at a bank, right? So the bank personnel, they come out and they have to get the deposits. People that load the money, like, you know, the companies that load the ATM, that replenish the money, they go into the ATM. Then you have the technicians that go inside the ATM. So, you know, that's three people right there that has access to the ATMs on any given day. So, no, I didn't think that they would pin or know that I took $1 to $2,000 every time I went to an ATM machine. So, I mean, when we go in and service the ATM machines, it's just open the cassette, get that half an inch, about $1 to $2,000, and put it in my little tool bag. And go on about my day. Most of the times, just go to the next ATM machine. Sometimes I took from multiple ATM machines per day. It depends on how much money I had in my pocket, right? So when I left my house, I don't know where I got this crazy rule from that I could not have less than $400 in my pocket. If I went to an ATM machine and I felt I needed money for whatever reason, I took it. No drug habits, no... I had no habit whatsoever. It was no reason for me taking this money other than the fact that it was there and I did not believe that I can get caught. So the anxiety was there. Although I had access to this ATM machine, I was not doing anything wrong because this was my job. I didn't break into the ATM machine. But when I took that money out of the cassette, balled it up or rolled it up, put it in a rubber band, put it in my tool bag, the anxiety was there. Like, man, it was almost a thrill to know that I was taking $1 to $2,000 from every ATM machine I went to. It was a thrill. I cannot describe it other than that, than it being a thrill and some type of adventure. From the time I started training as a electronics technician until the time that I began to take money out of the ATM machines, it was a relatively short period of time, probably a few weeks. So when I got the job, I was making I was making about $800 a week. The span of my whole expedition or voyage of me taking money only lasted probably for about 1 to 2 months before they really caught on to the ATMs that I was servicing coming up short. I mean, I probably would take money daily. You know, it wasn't from every ATM machine I visited because, you know, I visited sometimes 6 to 10 ATM machines per day. So, no, I wouldn't take from every ATM machine, but I probably would almost take daily for about 2 months. And it came up to about $40-some thousand. I do not believe that if my job would have never caught me or stopped me from taking money, I highly doubt I would have ever stopped taking money. Because, again, I reiterate the fact that for it to be so much money in these ATM machines, I thought in the back of my head that there is no way that they can be missing this money. There is no way that anybody could know $1,000 out of hundreds of thousands of dollars is gone. So no, I don't believe I would have ever stopped taking money. While I was taking the money from the ATM machines, I felt good about myself, not because I was taking money, but because of what I was doing with the money. Some of my friends, close friends and family, anytime they was experiencing any kind of hardship or anything, Ken would be the one, or I would be the one to help them out. You know, it was nothing for me to give somebody $800 or $1,000, you know, to catch up on a bill, or, you know, to go spend $200 or $300 at Walmart at the grocery store because they need some groceries to feed their kids. Now, I also spent money on myself as well. I bought 2 motorcycles, cash money. Like when I say cash money, literally, I went to the dealership with $8,000. The first motorcycle was about $4,000. I went to the dealership with $4,000 cash money, $20 bills, and in my book bag, dropped it on the table like, I want a motorcycle. They like, well, don't you want to finance it? I'm like, nah, I got cash money right here. So I went back and got a second motorcycle. I traded that one in because it became too slow, right? Got a second motorcycle. That was $8,000, more like $9,000. I dropped $9,000 on the table in $20 bills. I used to go out to eat a lot. I used to take my friends out to eat a lot. It made me feel good to take my friends out to eat, not because I was taking money, you know, because I still had morals, principles and values that I live by, that was convicting me on a daily basis. So I felt good about the things that I can do with the money, the people that I can help with the money. That's what made me feel good about what I was doing. One day I got a call from headquarters. And, you know, they asked me to come in. I already knew what time it was. I knew that I had been caught. Nobody gets a call to headquarters. I knew I had been caught. So I took all the keys to the ATM machine, all my equipment on the motorcycle that I purchased with the stolen money. And I drove to headquarters. They sat me down. And they pretty much told me, we see what you're doing. I admitted to taking the money. It was no way to lie. I did it. I admitted to it. They asked me, how much did I take at any given time? And I told them a pinch. A pinch is equivalent to about, their records show anywhere from $800 to $1,200, sometime up to $2,000. So a pinch was about $1,000 to $2,000. And they said, yeah, that's pretty consistent with our records. Our records show that you took from 13 different ATMs, and those 13 times, each of them was over $1,000. And you took from a 14th ATM, but it was less than $1,000. So that's what our records show. And they asked me, do you have any money on you right now? I said, no. Do you have any more money that you can give us? Of course, I said, no. And I turned the keys in, and that was pretty much it. So then I say that was around about April or May. It wasn't until about October or November of 2004 that I received a knock on my door. And that was the beginning of the whole legal process and, you know, booking me and processing me and all the other good stuff. I still had several thousand dollars at the house. And when I realized that I was being charged with 13 felony larcenies and 1 misdemeanor larceny in 3 different counties, I reached out to find an attorney. At that time, my attorney got me 60 months probation, providing I pay back $40,000 in restitution. Well, at that time, I mean, I don't know. I think my payments was anywhere from $500 to $600 per month. At that time, I had just had my firstborn, and I was faced with a child support order at the time of about $436 per month. So with child support about $436 a month and restitution anywhere upwards of $600 a month, there was $1,000 a month that I could not pay, because nobody would hire anyone with 13 felony larcenies. So I went 4 years and 3 months of probation. I only had 9 months left to go, and I ended up falling behind on my restitution about three times. And after the third time, they revoked my probation because I couldn't keep up with the payments and child support, and they activated my sentence. I was facing a maximum of 365 months for 13 felony larcenies and one misdemeanor larceny. My lawyer got it down to I only had to do probation, right? Providing I pay back the restitution. After they revoked my probation, that's when the sentence was active. So in my mind, I'm thinking I'm going to do all of this prison time. And it was a state case, of course. It was, you know, it wasn't federal. It was a state case. I'm thinking in my mind, I got to go do all this time. And they ended up consolidating my sentence, my charges to four Class H felonies holding 6 to 8 months apiece. When they activated my sentence, I was supposed to go do 24 to 32 months. And I got blessed by the grace of God, and they ended up running all of those together, and I only had to do 1 6 to 8 month sentence in state prison, and I was done. Or at least I thought I was done. I was done with the prison system, but I was not ready to face the, you know, the rest of life with 13 felony larcenies and one misdemeanor larceny. I couldn't get a job. I still can't get a decent job. I got three kids now. So there was no way that anybody was going to, you know, pay me $40,000 or $50,000 or $60,000 to maintain my family with 13 felony larcenies. The biggest thing that inspires me to tell my story is because I am a statistic. I am now 33 years old. I have two kids out of wedlock. I have an extensive criminal background. I'm an African-American male. So I am a statistic. Now, that is the single most factor that, alongside of the fact that I'm a statistic, I choose not to remain a statistic. I choose not to operate as the statistic. Hearing some of the thought processes of the younger generation as it pertains to crime, as it pertains to, if you give me $5 million, I only got to do 2 years of prison. I'll take that any day. Hearing that, some of the words that was coming out of their mouth was the same way I felt in 2004. I was like, I can't be caught, you know, or man, if I only got to do this amount of time for this huge amount of money, I should be good. Well, I was once that guy. I was once that guy with the thought process of I can't get caught. And to be able to be the guy that did get caught and to look just like the guys that was talking about that they won't get caught, I felt led to, or I feel led to, help the next generation or anyone with that thought process to, I want to help them not make the same decisions that I made. And it's kind of tough because, I know I have to tell my story in a manner that it won't hurt me further down the line, but it's just like, I'm to the point now where I'm just like, y'all, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. Point blank, period. You're going to get caught one way or the other. I just had my third child. She's 11 months old now. I have a 11-year-old and a 10-year-old. I am going to continue to build my business like it's nobody's business. I've been in business since 2007. So at the end of this year, I am having a 10th year customer client appreciation dinner for all of my support. Anybody who supported me tremendously over the last 10 years, I'm going to show my appreciation to them. I'm going to continue to build this business, get more clients, get bigger invoices. Like, so the immediate gratification in me never went away, right? And here's the crazy part.
Every day I go to work, every event I do, every wedding I do, every graduation, every milestone birthday party, it's like immediate gratification. Why? Because now I have a camera and a video camera, and I capture these moments and can turn them around and give them to these clients, you know, of course, in a few weeks. It's not immediate, but I can provide immediate memories. Furthermore, I can provide great studio quality prints at our photo station. Like, you get instant prints, kind of like a Polaroid was back in the day, but it looks 10 times better, right? You're getting studio quality prints on site. Guess what, guys? That's immediate gratification. Like, it's still a part of me. So I can't say that I don't get the urge to steal anything. If I can be candid, it's still in me. But now I'm way more mature, and now I have another vehicle that I can get in. Instead of taking money from an ATM machine, I can give a client some immediate results, and they can pay me what I'm worth or what I deserve, enough to sustain my bills, enough to raise my children, enough to, if I want to go on a vacation, I could. So now I took my immediate gratification and put it in another vehicle, and now it's legal, right? And guess what? The same anxiety that I had when I was taking money out the ATM machines is the same anxiety I get when I'm about to shoot a wedding. It's the same anxiety I get before I'm about to shoot a birthday party, or it's the same anxiety I get before I'm about to do a live production. It's still in me. I just channeled it. I channeled that energy into something that's way more profitable, is totally legal, and I can be recognized in the whole wide world for doing this amazing work, capturing amazing memories, and I can leave a legacy behind for my kids, my family. It's still in me, right? It's still a part of me. And you know what? I just told somebody that the other day. We just recently started doing some live Facebook broadcasting, like professional, using professional DSLR cameras. Like, I'm still nervous. Like, I get this anxiety in me. I start biting my fingers and like feeling like the same way I felt when I was taking money. And it just feels so good to know that the anxiety is legal now. I won't get in trouble for this. My biggest temptation right now is, and this is crazy, and thank God I passed the test every time, but my biggest temptation right now is equipment, right? Tools to get the job done. So if I go to a Coliseum or a Annex or somewhere that got a lot of AV equipment, you know, immediately it's like, oh man, I can use some extra cables, or I can use another camera, or I can use this. And I constantly have to, you know, battle in my mind, like, nah, man, I done built this business for 10 years. I can't see it go down the drain like this, because I feel like it's going to come back, and it's going to come back in a way that it's going to take away my business income. So I'd be like, nah, I'm good, and walk right away.
Okay, so the story is over. So what'd you think, Tim? Pretty amazing, right? He almost got away with it.
Yeah, I can't even believe, you know, working at a job like that you wouldn't think all the money is accounted for all the way down to the first penny.
Can you just think about the adrenaline rush that he must have had when he was seeing all that money and he took it and started spending it?
That's one of the mind-blowing feelings that I had from it, was that he was stealing it, but he liked to help people with the money.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. But then when you hear what he was doing with the money and his whole, you hear it in his, through his voice of how he was describing his feeling from taking the money, that he was trying to do good and help people. If somebody had a payment, he would help them.
Which was really nice. I mean, he saw the need, but you know, I remember when I first met him, I was like, wow, like we all try to push the envelope. I think we all do. And so I think that's why this story is so relatable. But sometimes the envelope falls off the table. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed this week's story. We'll be pounding the pavement to look for another story really soon.
Yeah, thanks for being here with us for this first episode.
So catch us on Facebook at Nothing But The Truth, where we'll be updating what we're doing and up, upcoming episodes and also on Twitter, right?
Yeah, comments, thoughts or opinions on anything about the story, the situation.
Yeah, we're all open. All right, so send them to us. Follow us on Twitter. Our handle is at NBTT Podcast.
Also, our website is nothingbutthetruthpodcast.org. Once again, thanks for listening to the show.
Until we meet again, always tell the truth.